You are listening to an exclusive podcast on Money Control.
Well, it is the 23rd of July. The day has come to an end, at least on Dalal Street, and bears are running around rampant on Dalal Street. The Karnataka government, on the other hand, is still stuck in a bit of a quagmire, and people are still talking. Right now, I'm talking to you in front of this microphone, but people are still talking in the Vidhan Sabha. Britain has a new prime minister. All of those stories and everything else that you absolutely must know in order to be the intelligent person that you are what I carry on the stories of the day. My name is Rakesh Sharma and you're listening to Money Control.
Editor's pick of the day.
Let's start with some IMF news. Well, IMF in relation to India, that is. We did a big story on what the IMF does over the course of the last week. So if you've always wondered, what is the IMF? Well, that is your podcast to listen to. The IMF today has revised downward India's growth forecast for 2019-2020 by 30 basis points to 7% as it sees weaker domestic demand. In April, it had revised India's growth projection by 20 basis points. Over the last month, the RBI, as well as the chief economic advisor in the Finance Ministry, that is Krishnamurthy Subramanian, and the Asian Development Bank have also revised downward their growth projections for India to 7%. GDP in India, GDP growth, that is, in the fourth quarter of 2018-2019 slowed down more than expected to 5.8% from 6.6% in the previous quarter on the back of slowing investment and consumption demand. IMF said the recent softening of inflation across emerging markets and developing economies gives central banks the option of becoming accommodative, especially where output is below potential and inflation expectations are anchored. It is earnings season, like I said. Let's do a quick roundup of some of the bigwigs that came out with their earnings today. Engineering and infrastructure major L&T reported a 21.2% growth in June quarter consolidated profit at 1,473 crore rupees year-on-year, with order inflow rising 11%. Profit in the corresponding quarter last fiscal was 1,129 crore rupees. Profit from continuing operations also increased 20.5%. L&T, in its BSE filing, said its consolidated revenue was at 29,636 crore rupees from continuing operations. The company retained its full-year order inflow growth guidance at 10 to 12% and sales growth forecast at 12 to 15%. Another bigwig that had its results come out today, Hindustan Unilever, reported a 14.8% jump in its standalone net profit at 1,755 crore rupees on the back of better volume growth. The company had reported a profit of 1,529 crore rupees in the year-ago period. The revenue of the company rose 6.6% at 10,114 crore rupees. The company has reported a domestic volume growth at 5%. EBITDA was up 18%, margin was at 26.2%. Reported EBITDA improvement was 250 basis points. If those were gains in the earnings season, there were losses as well. NIIT Technologies registered a consolidated net profit of 83.4 crore rupees, down 11% year-on-year for the quarter ended June. The company's consolidated net profit stood at 93.8 crore rupees for the comparable quarter last year. Consolidated revenue from operations rose 16.7%. On sequential basis, the company's revenue went down by 1% and net profit down by 18.28%. Its total order intake for the quarter was $175 million. Reuters has reported that Reliance Industries' talks to grant a minority stake in its refining assets to Saudi Aramco have hit a roadblock over the valuation and structure of the deal, two people familiar with the matter have said. State-owned Saudi Aramco, which is the world's biggest oil producer, plans to boost investment in refining and petrochemicals to secure new markets for its crude and seize growth in chemicals as central to its downstream strategy to reduce risk as oil demand slows. Reliance had held talks on offering Aramco at least 20% in a special purpose vehicle covering refining, petrochemicals and marketing, and with a focus on expansion. One of the sources said talks have stalled because Reliance is asking for a higher valuation and wants to transfer debt of the holding company to the new SPV. We do not have a comment as of now from either Reliance or Saudi Aramco. Reliance, of course, controlled by Mukesh Ambani, operates the world's biggest refining complex with a capacity to process 1.4 million barrels per day of oil at Jamnagar in western India. Well, this is significant. The IT ministry is likely to propose that personal information, which neither qualifies as critical nor sensitive, should be allowed to be stored and processed anywhere while data classified as critical should be kept only in India under the draft Personal Data Protection Bill. The proposal is significant because it marks a departure from the original draft of this bill, which had recommended that copy of all personal data should be stored in the country only. The tweaking of this provision, if it is accepted, will of course be a relief for a lot of companies. As we know, from Wilbur Ross to Mike Pence to Mike Pompeo to Donald Trump, everybody has been talking about how India is restrictive when it comes to data and how they can't make more money out of the data. But now, if this goes through, this amendment, they will be very happy. This draft submitted by Justice B.N. Sri Krishna Committee last year had also suggested that personal data that is of critical nature should be mandatorily stored only in India, a stance that will be backed by the IT Ministry. According to a government official, the IT Ministry is of the view that not all personal data needs to be stored in India and only critical and sensitive data should be kept here. We spoke about Reliance earlier. Their son-in-law, Anand Piramal, has made an undisclosed investment in Snapdeal, according to the company. This development comes just a week after Snapdeal announced that it has trimmed its losses significantly for the fiscal year 2018-2019. This investment also marks a new investment into Snapdeal after its last infusion in 2017 by existing investor Nexus Venture Partners. After Snapdeal's proposed merger with Flipkart fell through in 2017, the company went through a series of changes, what it called Snapdeal 2.0, and it has managed to make a turnaround. The Supreme Court today cancelled the RERA registration of the Amrapali Group and the lease of properties granted to the company by Noida and Greater Noida authorities. The Apex Court bench also directed the ED to register a money laundering case against the Amrapali Group as well as its directors. The ED was asked to conduct a detailed investigation into the diversion of home buyers' money by the company. The Mumbai bench of the NCLT said it will hear on the 8th of August the insolvency proceedings against Jet Airways and the progress report by the insolvency resolution professional appointed by the court to oversee the bankruptcy proceedings. The tribunal comprises judges VP Singh and Ravi Kumar Duraisamy, and this bench has asked the IRP for Jet Airways, Ashish Chaucharia of Grant Thornton India, to discuss employee salary concerns with the committee of creditors. The Lok Sabha has passed the Motor Vehicles Amendment Bill. This bill aims to amend over 6 sections and introduce several new sections. The bill proposes development of a system for cashless treatment of road accident victims. I suppose this is essentially international business news, but I'm going to include it in Indian because the man at the center of it is, well, Indian origin. Microsoft has agreed to invest $1 billion in a partnership with research group OpenAI, gaining a prominent cloud computing customer from the artificial intelligence field. This, according to a report by Bloomberg. OpenAI, which was co-founded by Elon Musk and other wealthy Silicon Valley entrepreneurs, will use Microsoft's Azure cloud services to train and run the group's AI software. The two will also jointly develop supercomputing technology, and Microsoft will be OpenAI's preferred partner to commercialize its creations, the companies said in a statement on Monday. Microsoft's cloud computing business making a lot of inroads and even giving Amazon a run for its money of late. Well, in news from across the country, what else but Karnataka? The Karnataka government has fallen after days of drama. There was a vote of no confidence, in Vidhan Sabha today, and 99 people were with the coalition government, 105 with the BJP, and 20 people absent in Vidhan Sabha. And that means the Karnataka coalition government of 14 months between the JDS and Congress has now fallen. What happens next is, of course, still unsure. What happens next is, of course, certain that Kumaraswamy has to go to the governor's house and submit his resignation. That is for certain. What next after that, we don't know yet. The floor test began just about a few hours ago. My dad has been glued to the television set, and there were all sorts of dramatic speeches from Siddaramaiah to H.D. Kumaraswamy and so on. And in the house was present also B.S. Yediyurappa. Responding to the debate, Kumaraswamy said he was not particularly worried about the end of this debate, and unfortunately, well, it did not quite end well for him. Ahead of the debate, Speaker Ramesh Kumar had made some lacerating comments after seeing near empty treasury benches in the assembly despite a 6 p.m. deadline for the trust vote. He demanded, and I quote, "Should this be the fate of the Speaker or the Assembly, you will lose credibility, let alone strength." Now, this has happened in Karnataka. What next is going to be yet another edition of the big Nataka that unfolds in Karnataka every so often. US President Donald Trump's stunning claim that Prime Minister Modi had asked him to mediate on Kashmir has provoked a firestorm today in Parliament, where Foreign Minister S. Jaishankar said he was categorically assuring the House that no such request had been made by PM Modi to the American president. This could just be yet another example of Trump making stuff up. Jaishankar told the Houses, and I quote, "I would like to put it on record that no such request was made by the Prime Minister to Trump. All issues with Pakistan has and will remain bilateral between India and Pakistan." Not appeased by the minister's clarification, the opposition parties aggressively demanded that PM Modi clarify on Trump's comments in Parliament and said they would not stop protesting until he did. They shouted slogans like Pradhan Mantri Sadan Mein Aao, Pradhan Mantri Jawab Do, etc., etc. Opposition parties even walked out in the Lok Sabha and in the Rajya Sabha. Unrelenting protests forced more than one adjournment in the Houses of Parliament today. Just to give you context, Imran Khan met with President Trump. Imran Khan, by the way, was not received by any Trump top officials at Dulles Airport in Washington, D.C. And he had a press conference, or at least met with Imran Khan in the White House, and several wonderful scenes unfolded. Trump, in his usual way, meaning bullshitting, said that he could wipe off Afghanistan if he wanted to in about a week's time, but he did not want to kill 10 million people. All right. Other gems emerged from his mouth. One of them was this: "I was with Prime Minister Modi 2 weeks ago and we talked about the subject. And he actually said, 'Would you like to be a mediator or arbitrator?' And I said, 'Where?' And he said, 'Kashmir, because this has been going on for many, many years.' I was surprised for how long it has been going on." And Imran Khan interjected and said, 70 years. So President Trump went on to say, "Oh, I think they would like to see it resolved. I think I would like to see it resolved. And if I can help, I would love to be a mediator. It is impossible to believe that two incredible countries that are very, very smart and very, very smart leadership can't resolve it." His words, not mine. "But if you want me to mediate or arbitrate, I would be willing to do it." A quick cricket news. Virat Kohli has retained the top position in the ICC Test Batsman's Rankings released by the World Cricket Regulatory Body, ICC, on Tuesday today. Virat Kohli is leading the chart with 922 points, just 9 points ahead of New Zealand skipper Kane Williamson. With 881 points, Cheteshwar Pujara is the other Indian in the top 3 of the ICC Test Batsman's Rankings. In the ICC Test All-Rounders Rankings, India's Ravindra Jadeja secured the third spot behind West Indies' Jason Holder and Shakib Al Hassan of Bangladesh. In Test Team Rankings, India remained in top, and that was followed by New Zealand, South Africa, England and Australia. In the bowlers list, Jadeja and Ravichandran Ashwin are 6th and 10th respectively. Veteran England pacer James Anderson, who was overtaken by South Africa fast bowler Kagiso Rabada in November and subsequently by the present number 1 Pat Cummins of Australia, is ranked 2nd. So basically James Anderson is 2nd and Pat Cummins is 1st. Well, you might have seen it, Prime Minister Modi was playing with a baby. Well, he is the most followed world leader on Instagram. This I did not know until just recently. The most followed world leader on Twitter, I think, is Donald Trump. And on Instagram, it's Modi. And there was a cute little baby that was in his office and he was playing with it. And the candy that was there was Bounty. That baby is 8 months old and that baby should not be eating candy. That I will tell you that much. Bounty is good though. Bounty has coconut inside and chocolate outside. This is also a racial slur, by the way, for brown people who think they're white people. Brown on the outside, white on the inside, Bounty. Never use it. Although I've just given you some information about a semi-racial slur that is out there. Don't use it. Anyway, people were wondering who this baby was, and that mystery has been cleared. It is BJP parliamentarian Satyanarayan Jatia's 8-month-old granddaughter called Rudrakshi. Rudrakshi, don't eat candy just yet. There, my public service announcement. Well, we've been wondering about Donald Trump's complete inefficacy when it comes to diplomacy and understanding international relations. But hey, the new Prime Minister of Britain will surprise you even more than that buffoon. That's coming up next. All right, the political turmoil in Karnataka may still be ongoing, but there seems to be a result when it comes to Britain, and it is time for a new Prime Minister in the United Kingdom. Boris Johnson has been elected new Tory party leader, and that means he will be the next Prime Minister. This came about after beating Jeremy Hunt. The former mayor of London, Lord of the Bad Haircuts, and indeed the Donald Trump of the United Kingdom, has long wanted to be the Prime Minister of the country, and it has finally happened. He won 66% of the votes, that is 92,153, and his competitor, Jeremy Hunt had 46,656. Turnout was 87.4%. Now, if you're wondering if this is the whole country and I'm still talking in terms of thousands, no, it is not the whole country. It is just the Conservative Party. And there are about 160,000 party members. And now they have elected not just the leader of their party, but in fact, the Prime Minister of the country. Go figure. In a characteristically light-hearted acceptance speech, Boris Johnson conceded that even some of his own supporters may just be wondering quite what they have done. Boris Johnson claimed that the Tory party had historically demonstrated it could manage the jostling instincts in the human heart, as he called it, such as those of owning a home as well as helping the poorest in society. He said, and I quote, "Today, at this pivotal moment in our history, we again have to reconcile two noble sets of instincts. Between the deep desire for friendship and free trade and mutual support and security and defence between Britain and our European partners, and the simultaneous desire, equally heartfelt, for democratic self-government in this country," unquote. Doesn't it make you almost feel like the European Union was governing Britain? Let me just tell you, it was not the case. Britain was governing Britain. In any case, he reminded his audience of ministers and party staff of his campaign mantra. What was it? Deliver Brexit, unite the country, and defeat Jeremy Corbyn, saying some wag had pointed out that this spelled DUD, D-U-D, you see, deliver Brexit, D, unite the country, U, and defeat Jeremy Corbyn, D, that means DUD. He joked that the final E, that is E for energize, had been left out, and he went on to say, "I say to all the doubters, dude, we are going to energize the country." Jesus, this is what it's going to be. Across the pond, it's that buffoon. And on this side, this one. Johnson also said he would get Brexit done by the 31st of October with a new spirit of can-do. Well, that's not the end of drama in Britain. Obviously, Donald Trump on the other side congratulated Boris Johnson and said he would be great for the country. But Johnson's victory comes at a rather difficult time for the United Kingdom. It is a rather perilous political moment for the Conservative Party, which has a wafer-thin working majority in the Parliament, and that majority is expected to be eroded a little bit more in just a couple of weeks if the Lib Dems, that is the Liberal Democrats, win the Brecon and Radnorshire by-election. Johnson has also faced a furious internal revolt even before arriving in 10 Downing Street, with several key cabinet ministers, including Chancellor Philip Hammond, saying they will resign rather than serve under him. They've been alarmed by Johnson's insistence that he is willing to countenance leaving the EU without a deal, that is no deal Brexit, on the 31st of October, rather than postpone Brexit once again, even if that meant proroguing Parliament. This, according to a report by The Guardian. Despite media management, his campaign has been dogged by a lot of controversies. We have spoken about that phone call and the neighbour coming in to see if there was a fight going on between his current girlfriend, that is Carrie Simmons, etc. It's been a rather tumultuous journey to 10 Downing Street, and it is unlikely to go any quieter now that he is in Downing Street. All right, with that piece of rather important political news done, let's find out what's happening in financial markets elsewhere in the world. We start things off, as usual, with the United States. U.S. stock futures are poised for a second day of gains today following the announcement of a debt and spending deal by the White House and congressional leaders. The major averages had rebounded from a Friday loss earlier in the day on reports that the deal was about to be announced. The S&P 500 sits at about 1% below its all-time high hit on the 15th of July, and the Dow is about 0.7% below its own record high. It is also a busy day for earnings on Wall Street today. Coca-Cola, United Technologies, Travelers, all of them lead this morning's earnings reports, and Kimberly-Clark, Harley-Davidson, Hasbro, Biogen, Fifth Third, KeyCorp, Lockheed Martin will also be issuing their quarterly numbers today. Donald Trump and congressional leaders have struck a two-year U.S. debt ceiling and budget deal. This deal moves the U.S. closer to dodging the threat of debt default and automatic spending cuts. It also could prevent a government shutdown when funding expires after the 30th of September, though lawmakers will have to pass separate appropriations bills. Now, as we know, there was already one of the longest, if not the longest, I'm not quite certain at this moment, government shutdowns that took place, all because of Donald Trump's tantrum. That the Congress was not granting him his money for that wall of his, which has not been built, by the way, despite whatever he might say in rallies. So this deal could prevent another shutdown of that sort from happening. More than 2,000 migrants who were in the United States illegally have been targeted in widely publicized raids that unfolded across the country last week. The figures the government provided to the New York Times on Monday show that just 35 people have been detained in the operation. President Trump had said these raids, called Operation Border Resolve, was a sure force amid an influx of Central American parents and children across the southern border. After postponing these raids in June, Mr. Trump said he ahead of time that they would take place last week. Two current DHS officials, that is the Department of Homeland Security officials, and one former official also confirmed to the New York Times that an enforcement operation would take place around mid-July. The publicity may have prompted many of those who had been targeted, that's about 2,105 people, to temporarily leave their homes or to move altogether to evade arrest. As of now, we have 35 people who have been arrested in these raids. Some people might argue these are all diversionary tactics because Donald Trump is running scared because what is coming up tomorrow is special counsel Robert Mueller answering a bunch of questions about his investigation in the Congress. The letter is an indication to how difficult it may be to extract any new information when he testifies to the Congress tomorrow. And what is this letter that I'm talking about? This is a letter from the Justice Department, which has told former special counsel Robert Mueller that he should avoid answering a few questions. Is the Justice Department, which is now pretty much the personal law office of Donald Trump, working extra hard to prevent Mueller from giving what many people are considering a damning testimony? We don't know, but we will hear Robert Mueller tomorrow when he answers questions. Within the Trump administration, which is sort of a get-rich scheme for a lot, Secretary of Education Betsy DeVos and her family are among the groups that have seen an income boon of millions through their own investments since the tax reform plan of Donald Trump was signed. Ethics attorneys argue that the complexity of the finances of Betsy DeVos and her family make it nearly impossible for government watchdogs to keep track of who may be trying to have an influence over her. But suffice to say that there are far too many connections between those who stand to gain from her decisions and her own job, and how interconnected these two are in terms of emoluments clause. Emoluments clause is to gain personally through the work that you do for the government, and this has been cited several times by people in the media, and how Donald Trump himself has also gained so much from his international hotels and golf courses, which a lot of people book lots of rooms for dignitaries visiting the country, end up booking a set of rooms in these golf courses and in these hotels in order to seem like they're being favorable to Donald Trump. And in this way, Donald Trump's own businesses have gained a lot of money over his tenure. So these emoluments clause now also should show that Betsy DeVos has made a ton of money since becoming education secretary. Apple is in advanced talks to buy assets from Intel's modem chip business, potentially acquiring patents and staff valued at about $1 billion or more, this according to a report on the Wall Street Journal. If this purchase happens, it would again underscore Apple's increased willingness to consider large multi-billion dollar acquisitions with its war chest of $225 billion in cash and marketable securities. Meanwhile, Donald Trump has met with CEOs from Google, Broadcom, and other tech companies to discuss trade practices and national security issues. The discussion came as tech companies face the potential of increased regulation following a week of hearings on Capitol Hill. We've spoken all about it in the antitrust and FTC sorts of scenarios over the course of the past week. Finally, Facebook is expected to announce a settlement with the Federal Trade Commission over its privacy practices as soon as this week. It has already been reported, and I've told you the story, that it could include a fine of about $5 billion as well as a number of privacy-related requirements. How much exactly, we will know later this week. Meanwhile, Equifax will pay about $671 million to settle numerous state class action lawsuits and investigations by the FTC and the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. The deal, which is still subject to a six-month court approval process, will establish a consumer restitution fund of up to $425 million, according to CNBC. Outside of the U.S., Puerto Rico, which is, well, inside the U.S. because it is a U.S. territory, but the mainland U.S. has always treated Puerto Rico with stepmotherly disdain. I've been reading about this book about how the United States created an empire, and I highly recommend this book, and Puerto Rico is one of the territories that the writer talks about. What is happening in Puerto Rico? Well, tens of thousands of people blocked highways to pressure Governor Ricardo Rossello to resign over leaked homophobic and misogynistic attacks on rivals, and these demonstrations are continuing overnight. It's not just these the text messages that have resulted in this. It is also the rampant corruption, especially in the wake of Hurricane Maria. And there, the protesters' main aim is, we will keep protesting until he gets out of office. For his part, Ricardo Rosello has said he will not contest for elections again, but he is going to stay put. How this will end, we will let you know. Well, Venezuela was plunged into darkness once again. The government has blamed a countrywide blackout on Monday yesterday on an electromagnetic attack on its hydroelectric system without elaborating. Commuters were thrown into chaos in Caracas as traffic lights and the subway came to a halt. We will know more about this in the next few days, hopefully, and I will be happy and sure to let you know. Well, we are not in the mood for war, but this does not sound good either. South Korea fired some warning shots at Russian military jets. The government said it scrambled fighter jets and fired 360 rounds in response to multiple Russian aircraft entering its airspace on the East Coast twice. The Defense Ministry said it was the first time that Russian aircraft had done so, and Moscow has denied these allegations. Well, in some entertainment news to close out today's podcast, Lil Nas X's Old Town Road. I'm sure you've heard that song already. If you haven't, well, go listen to it. It's not bad at all. It features Billy Ray Cyrus, that is Miley Cyrus's father. Now, this particular song has tied the record for the most time tallied at number one in the chart's six-decade history. It has ruled Billboard Hot 100 for a 16th week. It now matches Despacito and One Sweet Day. This according to a report on Billboard. Before I let you go, what happened on the Lal Street today? The BSE Sensex fell 48 points to close at 37,982, while the Nifty 50 closed 15 points down at 11,331 today. Among the top Sensex gainers today were Power Grid, Kotak Mahindra Bank and Hero MotoCorp, State Bank of India, HDFC and HDFC Bank. That is, the HDFC twins were among the top Sensex losers today. Well, that's all the information you needed to know about today. I'll, of course, see you first thing in the morning tomorrow with a morning walk down the Lal Street, as well as some stocks for you to choose from. Or if you don't listen to those things and you just want your fix of the news, come back tomorrow, same time in the evening, and I will be here to give you the news of what happened everywhere in the world. Until the next time you hear from me, this is me, Rakesh Sharma, on behalf of the Money Control Podcast Desk, saying thank you for joining us and asking you to write to us, mcpodcast@nw18.com, and to stay logged on to moneycontrol.com to be a smart listener and an even smarter investor.
This has been today's Editor's Pick, and you've been listening to Money Control.